Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this.
Can you smell it? Culture Vulture, I'm on the air again. It's night time, and it's time for some fun. A little football. Ah, war, famine, vaccines, the hell with it. Football! Football! Wow. Number to call, 646-478-4847. We are less than 24 hours away from the opening kickoff of the 2010 regular season. Right now, huddled masses are gathering around computers like they used to gather around the caveman fire to pick their fantasy league teams. Oh, I don't do that crap, but I think it's kind of funny. And I'm a little more of a traditionalist when it comes to football. I like my football mean. I like my football raw. And I like my football with Lombardi. Let's see if I can find a little Lombardi. Let's see. Well, all right. We're going to do a little round robin here. Let's see if we get something here. There's so much good stuff here on the YouTube. Let's see. I want one that's kind of nasty. Let's see. Because there's always good ones here. Too poetic. Take it too long. Why do we start a funeral? That's what they play for, the Lombardi Trophy.
Take my advice. Give the ball to Sanders.
A little background football noise to start the show. Yeah, they're making a movie out of this guy's life now with De Niro playing the part of Lombardi. Get a seal here and a seal there. That's pretty stupid. Let's see, what's this? Well, like something a little saucy.
Lombardi.
Here we go.
The name alone conjures football excellence. As a man, as a coach, his eyes saw things others didn't. He molded his teams into champions. And they did things others couldn't. They played hard. They played hurt. They found the light inside themselves. And that is the ultimate Lombardi gift.
But a bum bump. Let's see, I'm gonna screen this one while we're talking here and see if we can is anything cool coming up. What is this? I don't know if I can hear it. NFL trims is this looks like a good one. Let's see. One back. I don't know. It doesn't help me. All right, we'll go to Parcells. I got to amp up a little bit here. Got to get a little pumped up here at 904. Give me a little Parcells here. Little Bill, little Tuna.
Records on the shelf.
happening either. Let's see. Can you hear him? How about this one? Ourselves and responsibility. Should be good. What do you got? Pretty cool. So let's see. Is he gonna talk? Talk already, Tuna.
Today we're going to talk to you about the one thing that drives coaches crazier faster than anything else. If you see a smile leave my face during a game and my face gets all red, there's a good chance that someone on my team has just fumbled the football. Few things drive coaches nuts faster than a player who does not take care of the football. Kids have to learn that if they're not responsible, then what they've been given will most likely be taken away. And when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, it takes a true person of character to stand up and accept responsibility rather than pointing the finger at someone else or making excuses. That's a real champion. We have a responsibility to do our best.
And like Emmett Smith, what is this crap, Emmett Smith?
Raising our kids with
they're showing the Pizarcik fumble. That's horrible. See, I got to get some good stuff here. Get in a football mood. Like I said, I got him give me lectures.
Bill, you know that you might see the Redskins down the road. Just the thought of that would scare you.
Let me tell you what I'm scared of. I'm scared of spiders, snakes, and the IRS.
Not the Redskins.
Well, you know, they're in our league. It's competition. I look forward to that.
There you go. Little Tuna. All right, I'll keep fishing some of these out tonight because there's got to be some good stuff on YouTube. I have no time. I have no spare time to find these things. Anyway, how you doing out there? Let's see if we got anything going on here. We got lots of things to report on. Right now, as we stand here, in the, looks like the top of the eighth inning down in Brooklyn, the Cyclones are hanging on, 6-3. They need to win this game to force a pivotal game three in their little wild card series there, which looks like I'll be going to the game tomorrow night with the Bean and perhaps Mr. Mike Silva. We'll find out later. He is at the game tonight. We'll be calling in with a live report, hopefully after 10 o'clock or maybe sooner. I don't know. He might call in sooner. The game's going pretty quick. So anyway, again, if you want to hop on the air tonight, it's 914. That's my number here in the office. 646-478-4847. So, getting back to some things. Let's go around the horn and get some things out of the way here. Because I got to start off with this dopey story. You've heard about it. Everybody's talking about it. It's all over the freaking news. This Meshuggah priest, I guess, down in Florida here. You know, International Burn the Koran Day coming up on the weekend. Everybody's throwing this guy under the bus, Terry Jones. It's a small church. It's only got 50 people in it. Very strange guy. 60-member church, I'm sorry. But basically, you know, he's a crackpot that's now gotten the bullhorn to the universe, and everybody is descending like a locust to basically disparage him. And, of course, we have to hear from Hillary about this. So, all right. The Vatican says the terrorist attacks of 9/11 cannot be counteracted by an outrageous and grave gesture against a book considered sacred by a religious community. Eric Holder called it idiotic and dangerous. Haley Barber says there's no excuse for it. Robert Gibbs, putting the troops in harm's way. Joe Lieberman, who cares? Michael Bloomberg called it boneheaded and wrong, but protected his First Amendment rights. He has the right to do it. And Angelina Jolie. Oh, there's a little Angelina Jolie clip here we should play. Let's play that, then the Hillary clip. Now Angelina Jolie on the Koran burning priest. Killing me with these commercials. Every week I gotta get around this stuff. The web is dead. The web is dead! Enough. Freaking Blackberries. Like, I need to see this every 10 seconds, a stupid Blackberry. Alright. Eventually we get to Angelina Jolie here. About 5 seconds. Because everyone has to hear what she has to say about the crackpot priest.
Of course not. Of course not. I have hardly the words to that somebody would do that to somebody's religious book. Something happens, then you have to assess for an appeal, then you make an appeal, then you wait for the money to come in for the appeal, then you try to distribute, and all the time people are waiting to just have basic survival, so we have to find a way to get money and more tools and put in place before disasters hit. And so this is a bigger question of how the international community and the UN function when it comes to this and what we need to do.
So there you go, this is Angelina Jolie checking in from Pakistan. She's over there raising awareness about the floods, the big floods. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago. Floods all over the place. Floods in China, floods over there. So Angelina Jolie is literally wearing the, you know, traditional garb, and she's opining about the about the crackpot priest. And, of course, Hillary. She ain't going to miss a chance. Hillary looks like hell. I mean, you know, they freeze the frame in the picture, you know, before they play the video. The bags under her eyes, I mean, you literally, the woman looks like someone hit her in the face with a box of rocks. I mean, I can't get the eyes are drooping. The nervous system is degenerating. The Onto is starting to come down the mountain. Anyway, Hillary not losing her fastball yet. Here she is talking about the dopey priest. Yeah, let's see. Of course, there's going to be a commercial first. Same freaking commercial. 30 seconds of Blackberry. And let's while that's going on, let me quickly. All right. Might as well stay where I was. Anything going on over here? Oh, my God. Jamestown has tied it up at 6. Unbelievably. This is a shocking turn of events. Wait a second. Screw Hillary. I got a crisis. 8th inning. They were up 6-3. This was over. What happened? Again, the bullpen. They've been shutting them down all night. Game was a laugher. Brooklyn, bottom of the 7th. They were home. They were 6 outs from Thursday night. Oh, it's horrible. I don't know, man. I go to check for 2 seconds. I got a comment on that. Typing. All right, so here we are. Let's get a look at Hillary's comments for what they're worth about the crazy crack-ass piece.
Blessed right now, and I mean, it's regrettable that a pastor in Gainesville, Florida, with a church of no more than 50 people, can make this outrageous and distressful, disgraceful plan and get, you know, the world's attention. But that's the world we live in right now. I mean, it doesn't in any way represent America or Americans or American government or American religious or political leadership. And we are, as you've seen in the last few days, you know, speaking out, General Petraeus made the very powerful point that as seemingly, small a group of people doing this, the fact is that it will have potentially great harm for our troops. So we are hoping that the pastor decides not to do this. We're hoping against hope that if he does, it won't be covered. an act of patriotism, but I think that it's unfortunate. I mean, it's not who we are, and we just have to constantly be demonstrating by our words and actions. And as I remind my friends around the world, in the environment in which we all now operate, anybody with an iPhone, anybody with a blog, can put something out there which is outrageous. I mean, we went through the cartoon controversy. We went through the Facebook controversy in Pakistan. Judith McHale, who's our Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy, is on the front lines of, pushing back on all of this all the time. And so we want to be judged by who we are as a nation, not by something that is so aberrational. And we'll make that case as strongly as possible.
All right. Is Hillary belittling and dismissing the Koran-burning pastor dude who looks like a combination of Colonel Sanders and Quint? Miss Jones. So, I don't know. If you have a reaction to that, let me know. But for the most part, my deal on this is that his whole effort is basically to get more people than 50 or 60 into his church. And there's enough radicals out there that will go, hey, that's the dude that's burning the Koran. So let's go run to him. I was saying the same thing. Why don't we just go for three? We'll burn that, the Bible, and the, what's the other one? There's the Koran, there's the Torah. We'll burn the Torah. The Hindus have one. They have a book. Take every religious book that's out there, burn them all, and then have a nice, kind of maybe a vegan barbecue to celebrate that we have no more religious books influencing our lives. Because every religious book that's out there causes a war. Because everything that has to do with religion and politics these days is the same basic mechanism, is that they give you a position, and then you take the supporting it or you go against it. So there's no way to live three-dimensionally on that line. And that's why we're always up against this crap, and that's why it causes people a lot of undue stress. 6-6 in Brooklyn as we speak. I'm really bummed because I wanted to go tomorrow night. My ticket was punched, Mike. Killing me. Killing me over here. All right, the next stop on the train, which is unfortunate again, is this healthcare debate. Now, last week we went all through the vaccine thing, which was as depressing as it gets, because as you look around the globe, other countries are wising up and basically not. Jamestown's now up 7-6. This is a choke job. Oh, this is terrible, Mike. When you look at the vaccine picture from a global perspective, you see people actually acting more proactively and intelligently, making more choices themselves. Not in this country. Not in this country. No, 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 no. In this country, we have to behave. We have to listen to the mighty insurance companies because they know better. They know better than you. And this is all sad, because what's happening, of course, is now the burden is shifting to the providers to figure out how they're going to be able to operate under these new standards. So I saw a story this morning, I'll fish around for it here in a minute, that actually blamed the doctors for the insurance companies having to raise their prices. Now, if you notice, it's kind of funny, if you notice, when these new laws come into place, which are going to basically, mandate coverage, right? So let's see if I can find it here. Healthcare costs. Fox TV. Boom. You got a whole different scenario here, the truth about healthcare costs, okay? And again, when you're dealing with the budget, you're dealing with all the money they moved around to give you more access to the third leading cause of death. Basically, what is it? It's more access to more drugs, more interventions, more vaccines, you know, and someone else pays for it, basically. That's sort of the long and the short of it. And what I see happening here, because as I said, during the process, or before, during, and after the process, is that the one thing that was not being represented here were the providers of the healthcare services. We're just like the equipment. Healthcare. I'm speaking as a healthcare provider for 19 years. We're not even included in the discussion. It's all the discussions between the government, the insurance companies, and the drug companies, not us. Hospitals have to do things to stay afloat, right? Let's see if this is the one I saw before. Because there's just so much going on in healthcare that leads into my next topic, but let's just see if I can find this clip. Insurance raises premiums because of Obamacare. All right, here's the full article. There was a little clip this morning on Fox News I saw, but I'll just read it. Let's see. Wall Street Journal. Dun, 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 dun. Or as they say in Block Talk land, there it is.
You filthy criminies.
921, the first Batman salvo was raised. I can't believe Brooklyn's going to get swept out of the playoffs. I'm going to be so bummed later. I wanted good news, Mike. All right, let's see. Healthcare, this is from Janet Adamy from the Wall Street Journal. Health insurers say they plan to raise premiums for some Americans as a direct result of the health care overhaul in the coming weeks, complicated by Democrats' efforts to trumpet their signature achievement before midterm elections. Let's see. This it's a little video here. Let's see what this says. Why me read? Why me read? Why me play? We got another commercial for the BlackBerry?
Over 260 destinations.
The world of opportunity. Amazing. I was settled for the tie. Now we're losing. Yeah, let's see. It's called the Hub.
Just as President Obama is unveiling new initiatives to stimulate the economy, some old ones related to the health care plan are coming back to haunt him. Welcome to the News Hub. I'm Kelly Evans, joined this morning by Mean Street columnist Evan Newmark, back from his vacation. And your
back
viewers
from
are
Wyoming.
So happy. They're
back
so
from
happy.
Wyoming, Jackie O.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we also have Janet Adamy joining us from Washington. Her story today in the Wall Street Journal points out that there are several health insurers who are now raising premiums as a direct result of the health care plan that was passed earlier this year. So, Janet, first of all, what kinds of increases did you find in your reporting that people can look forward to?
What we're seeing, Kelly, is increases of between 1% and 9% that are directly related to new mandates in the health law. On top of that, companies are asking for some additional increases for medical inflation. So for consumers, some of them are seeing increases between or as much as 20%.
Wow. I mean, and one of the things certainly is the timing of these increases coming as they do just a couple of months before the midterm elections. But I'm curious how much of this is a direct result of the cost of health care plans and how much of this is companies just trying to take advantage of the environment to raise premiums.
Well, what the companies have said is that there are about five or six changes in the health law that they need to do within the first 6 months of it taking effect, so by September 23rd, in order to meet the new requirements. That's things like allowing kids to stay on their parents' insurance plans until age 26 or eliminating copayments for preventive services. The funny thing about this is that Democrats actually put this in the legislation early. They moved this stuff up in the bill so it would take effect. And consumers would see early benefits and they would be able to build a little bit of public opinion for the law. But what's happening is in the last couple of weeks, insurance companies have gone to state regulators and said, look, if you're going to make us do these things, we need to pass the cost on in premiums. And they've actually had actuaries look at their look at what it's going to cost them, and that's how they're justifying the increases.
Well, and you mentioned a couple of companies in the piece, Aetna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, a company called Celtic raising premiums, for example, 18%. They say half of that is due to the cost of health care. So it doesn't seem as though states, as you noted, really have that much ability to stop this, or the Obama administration to stop this from happening.
No, what the legislation did is it gave states some additional money for grant reviews, but it took out the big kind of the big teeth rate review provision that some Democrats had been hoping for, which was a federal rate review, and that effectively never ended up in the final product. So states are telling me that they'll have some power to try to block these, but if the health insurance companies say that they're actuarially justified, there may be very little they can actually do to keep them from raising the rates.
I think this is a glorious example of the law of unintended consequences, but it should have been totally predictable. It's simple math, Kelly. There is no way. How do you add benefits and expect costs to go down?
Well, I think
the math does not work.
They were expecting a little bit of an increase, I think something like 1% to 2%, Janet notes in her story, but this is certainly well above that.
1% to 2%? You're suddenly telling every 26-year-old that they can ride their parents' program, health care coverage, for years, or anybody under 26. How is that going to decrease costs? It makes no sense
and
whatsoever.
And what's interesting, too, Janet, you note in your piece that the people who are likely to feel this most are individuals and small businesses. It's the big corporate stimulus plans that aren't necessarily going to see these increases, correct?
That's an important point. It's people buying plans on the individual market and from small employers. And it's also new plans and plans that lose their grandfathered status. For individuals and small businesses, if you stay in your plan and you don't make any changes, in some cases you may be able to protect yourself from these increases. However, in other cases, insurers have told me these are going to apply to everybody whether you change your plan or not.
Okay.
And that's depressing enough. Last week with the vaccines, I got Brooklyn losing. You know, I got to get cheered up here. Come on the air. I'm trying to have fun here. You know, nothing but misery. Misery and greed all around me here. So in a couple minutes, we're going to get joined by our good friend Jared. That's Jared. I tried to get that clip before, but I can't. He's from venuing.com, Jared Murmy. So he should be joining us in a couple minutes. I'm still checking on this Brooklyn thing. This is so depressing. Let's see. They're losing 7-6 now. Let's see. 4 runs in the 8th inning. A crushing, heartbreaking defeat looming in Brooklyn. What happened? Let's see, we had a single, the first and second, nobody out, and then a ground ball, single, bases loaded, nobody out, single, 2 runs, okay, and then a throwing error, and then a sacrifice bunt, and then, dropped a foul pop, a strikeout swinging, and then a single line drive to left field to drive in. Another run. Wow. So it really ends in an error here. This guy, third baseman, dropped the foul ball. They left it a go-ahead run. Boy, that is just going to be brutal. Brutal. I got 5 hits in the inning. Jeez. I got 2 innings to tie the game. Otherwise, the season's over. Bone-crushing defeat for the Brooklyn Cyclones, who were, pretty much the darling of the New York Penn League all year long. I am so bummed by this. All right, let's see if this guy's here yet. Nope. 9:29. Should be here any minute. So, I wanted to do a little more swine flu stuff, but I don't know if I'm going to get to that, but, there's a lot to do. So we'll see. See if Mike calls in after this. I told him only call if we win, but it doesn't look good. 6-3 in the 8th. You got a team that's like the 27 Yankees at home, and they blow the lead? Wow. New Moon is messing with me. Messing with me. So, I guess while we're waiting for him here, let's see if we can find anything to do with Lombardi. Because, you know, the going gets tough. Let's see. Back to football. Lombardi. Ooh, there's a movie trailer. Are you kidding me? What's this about? Nah, this doesn't look like anything. It's a bunch of garbage. I'm a little disappointed there. Let's see. NFL Films. Dun, 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 dun. There's a couple of things here. Story of the Ice Bowl. Does it sound interesting? Nobody grabbing out there. Nobody tackling. That's probably what Wally Back would say right about now. God. So that's really my interest. My period interest in the Brooklyn Cyclones is all about the Met job. So I want Wally to get, you know, overlooked. Oh, we've tied the game. Wally sends runner from second on infield hit to tie the game. Oh, Wally. Bon. Yep. All right, we're tied, 7-7. I love it. I'm losing my mind, these freaking guys. All right, joining us now, let's see, from an undisclosed location, if I can find, I got to go with something here. Let's go with a little low.
Anyway, as I was lying in the puddle, I think I may have found a way for us to get Bonds and Griffey, and we wouldn't have to give up that much.
Well, don't tell it to me, George. Tell it to the new assistant of the general manager.
I didn't get the job?
Well, once you were dead, we couldn't just sit on our hands. We got to make a move. But you still have your old job. Of course, we'll have to dock you for the time you missed. We're running the ball club here. If I give special treatment to you, everyone will want it. Next thing you know, it's chaos. And I can tell you this. Chaos does not work for the New York Yankees. Not as long as I'm running the show.
All right, so joining us now from another school's location in New York City is Jared Murray from Venuing.com. Welcome to Summertime.
Thank you, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm better now that the Cyclones tied it up 7-7.
That always makes life a little better, huh?
Mike's down there in Brooklyn. He's probably like five people in the stands because of the Jewish holidays. And, you know, they blew a 6-3 lead. They went down 7-6. Now they just tied it 7-7 in the eighth inning. So Mike's going to be calling in with a post-game show update here somewhere along the line tonight. So I'm keeping tabs on it because if Cyclones win, I'm going to the game tomorrow night. So
Very cool, very cool.
My interest in that. So... starting from ground zero, because I guess I first came across your stuff when Mike emailed me about it back at the beginning of the summer. Why don't you tell the folks, because apps is like a whole other world. I mean, the people that do nothing all day, but they just sit there and sift through apps. They buy apps. They make apps. If you're sitting at your kitchen table right now and you want to make an app, do you need five people? Do you need 20? What is it that goes into the ingredients to making a popular app. Let's go that way.
Sure. Well, to have a popular app, all you need is a great idea. And then to execute it could take, you know, one person or it could take 20, depending upon the skill of your coder. And the dirty little secret is it's incredibly scalable. So you have, you know, the most populars out there like Foursquare. Their company only has about 20 to 40 employees or so, which only a small percentage are these engineers, these coders. So really all you have to do is have the necessary skill to execute a great idea. You come up with a game like Etch-a-Sketch, spend 2 weeks coding it if you know the language, and you could sell it for $5 and sell a million copies on the iTunes Apple Store and make, you know, make your millions of dollars real quick.
Wow. And it's become like, I remember, I don't know if the article was in Wired, one of those magazines, that basically said that the app world had sort of taken over from the web proper, that people spend more time on platforms and applications and things that are customized to their phone, customized to their own way of running around and these things, than they do on servers. And you know, I guess because the web's only like 15 years old or whatever, it just seems like, is this where it stops, or is there going to be something on top of these things that we're going to be doing? I mean, you guys kind of lost me at ringtones, to tell you the truth. But it just seems like everything's become monetizable, from movie clips to cartoon noises to, I mean, like people have so many things programmed into their phone. Is a certain point where there's going to be just too much of this stuff out there, and people are just going to get so sick of it, or do you just see it becoming a digital salad bar where everyone's just going to keep picking the cherry tomatoes and the croutons and keep going and keep filling their plate because of the fact that it's so creative and nonstop? There's always something new.
You know, I think in 5 to 10 years, and maybe even a lot closer, because these people are developing them at such a great rate, you're going to get to this place where everything, every bit of technology you own is going to be interconnected, whether it be your computer, your laptop, your tablet, your phone, even your TV, as, you know, Google and Apple begin to introduce web-based TVs. So basically, you're going to have the same media going into all of these devices, and you're just going to have your preference of how you want to see it, whether it be the small screen on your iPhone or, you know, your large 42-inch plasma. And when it comes to, you know, what software they're developing, you know, I think what we've learned and what social media really shows is people want to play producer. They don't want their content dictated to them anymore. They really like the customization and personalization that this all brings. And that's where we're going in terms of, you know, you see Facebook. It's just your ability to get whatever you want sent to you. And again, it's just going to be sent to you on whatever platform you choose. It started, you know, 15, 20 years ago with pay-per-view TV, and hopefully I'm getting my dates right there and not showing my age. But it slowly evolved from pay-per-view TV to where we are now with, you know, you have Hulu. You go on Hulu.com, you can watch whatever episode of whatever television show you want at any time.
Yeah, and again, growing up with this technology in the last 15 years as a nation, what I see happening is the big fish, and again, you could talk of them as network TV, you could talk of them as terrestrial radio, you could talk of them as newspapers. Rather than moving with this stuff, they seem to be the foot draggers. They seem to be the ones that, I mean, are we eventually going to have a pay-per-view Super Bowl? Are we going to have to, like, basically watch it on our sling box, you know, sitting around the huddled masses? It's the big money that goes into producing all this entertainment and all these sports and everything else, concerts, whatever, that still comes from the mainstream part of the economy. So all these new things that are customizing it to every eyeball, every eardrum, that's sort of a second level stuff. If the mothership, you know, suddenly decides to say, you know, I want a piece of the pie, how does this new industry, this new media, cope with the fact that all they really are is just a conveyor belt? I mean, they seem to just do nothing but relay old or tailored information to, you know, new in new ways. But they don't produce any of that information themselves, where Hollywood's still kicking out movies and, you know, there's still the four major sports are still pretty much running the universe. So how do you see the mesh between sort of the old world and the new world? Is it going to be a peaceful coexistence, or is it going to be a turf war?
I don't think it's a turf war at all. I think what we've sort of defined as the new world in this conversation, and really what has been, you know, the new world in each generation, has always just reproduced the content from a generation, and when I say generation, I mean technology-wise, previous. You know, television, you know, you could say they were just showing the games that of the sports that were created in the late 1800s, and what these technologies do is just create a more efficient way of reaching many more people. And really, you know, I often get asked, you know, what's social networking? And my answer to that is it's just regular networking on steroids, because it lets you network with so many more people so much more quicker. So what we're really doing is taking these sort of old human concepts and just making it so that they could, just accelerating the processes at which they happen and which they spread.
And you think that, that people basically have kind of accepted this stuff is here to stay and they don't look at it as peripheral anymore, they look at it as central to their lives, where maybe 15 years ago you get up and you put on the Today Show, now you get up and you check your phone, you check your Facebook page, you know.
I think you look at the numbers and it's hard to argue that it's not. There's 500 million people on Facebook. That's, what, one in every 16 people and one in every, how knows how many of the people who actually have access to computers and the Internet. It's really hard to argue that this social media isn't, you know, something that is more than just having its foot in the doors. It's really here.
Oh, I think it kicked the door down 5 years ago, basically. It was all about, to me, the bandwidth issue and, you know, the explosion first of things like YouTube and, I guess, MySpace, I guess, was in there for a while until the pedophiles took over. But, you know, for the most part, when they cleaned it up, when that second wave came in, and again, maybe you can break down some lingo for me tonight, because we talk about a lot of the show, this notion of health 2.0 and web 2.0, and it's just kind of fancy techie language for social media to me. But someone that's inside that world, that's talking that shorthand all day long, you know, blogosphere, all that stuff, do you perceive it as being sort of the treehouse of the 25 to 40-year-olds, and everybody that's younger is using it, and everyone that's older is sort of just learning it, and you guys are sort of kind of in it? So do you perceive it to be something that is shareable, or something that is sort of like you kind of buy it bit by bit, like social media can grow through corporate investment, it can grow through, you know, all these, you know, not so much the dot-com era with all the startups. But where do you see the real money coming to this thing from? Is it going to come from people saying, I see gold in them there hills, and they're going to just throw, you're going to have venture capitalists throw money at this? Or is it going to be sort of, you know, kind of a Silicon Valley kind of a thing?
Well, venture capitalists have already begun to throw a ton of money into all these startups. And even so, you know, that's usually just seed money and funding money. What's really imperative for most of these companies is to figure out, yeah, I can make this really cool product, but how do I make it profitable? So you see a company like Foursquare, and they've made an incredible product, and they really had to figure out after they created this base system, how do I make money off of that? And now they're beginning to do that through all these really cool partnerships and sort of advertising opportunities that larger corporations are able to do via their medium. And now Twitter, which is also facing the same problem, well, now they're exploring ways to actually sell things via Twitter, and they could take a cut off of that. So it's really important not only to come up with this great idea, is, you know, looking at the mindset of the entrepreneur, but think, okay, how do I make money off of this idea? And that might be, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, 101. But it's really more, it sort of comes more to the forefront when you talk about this new Web 2.0 and technology, because a lot of it's really easy to execute, but it is still a bit costly. But, you know, you can't just enter and make a product because it's fun and useful. You actually have to, you know, eventually make money off of this to be able to eat.
Yeah, okay, let's steer towards your company, because you're over there going to work every day, you know, at venuing.com. And, you know, I came upon your app through talking to Mike Silver about it. And I really saw it as something that could completely revolutionize the game experience that people have, because with the era of the PSL, with the era of, you know, pricing out everybody to go to these stadiums, it's just to me, football is worse than baseball, really. The second best thing to being at the game is having a friend at the game that can show you the game on your little phone. So give us a kind of 90-second overview of what venuing is and how you guys got the idea from basically sitting at the kitchen table to where it's now coming out of the showroom, so to speak, and people could start buying it and using it.
Sure. The original concept of venuing sort of hatched from a gray area of that is scalping. And we figured, you know, I sit up in the nosebleeds often, but I see these really, really wealthy guys leaving their fancy seats, you know, in the sixth inning of a baseball game. Maybe they'd be okay with, you know, throwing $10 so I can move up to their seat. And, you know, that's obviously a gray area, but there's a communication element within that that sort of evolved into what we now do. And we've sort of pivoted the company to really create a social network within the confines of a live event. So you're connecting everyone within a venue to one another, hence the company name Venuing. And the way we do that is through a chat feature, which is really unique and like nothing out there. We recreate the physical environment of the stadium through an overhead map similar to what you'd see sort of on a Ticketmaster or any of these ticket sites. And a series of 3D views in that together create a 360-degree feeling of the stadium. And what you see is a chat bubble that appears from the actual seat location of the person who said it in these various views. So if I'm sitting behind the bleachers in right field, my chat bubble pops out from the bleachers in right field in that view, as well as in the overhead map.
Okay. So basically, this is like, it's sort of, it's just a chat room with 50,000 people in it that are at the stadium, and very similar to, you know, some of the distance learning platforms I've seen, where you have a seat, a virtual seat, you know, and you can ask a question, and your little dot will light up so they know who's asking the question. So you could be talking to someone that's like behind the dugout, and you're up in the upper deck, and they have a completely different experience going on, and you're chatting with them, so you, but they don't know you. You might know them, or it seems like it's sort of, I don't want to say incestuous, it sounds a little weird, but it seems like you're sort of going through that barrier that happens on Twitter and Facebook. Where how do people know enough to do that? You'd have to have at least two people in there venuing, so to speak, before someone says, hey, you can get on this thing. So it's like if 20% of the crowd had your app, but they didn't know anybody else did, how would they know? Is it something that when they log in and they're at that event that they get a scroll of these are the people that are available, or they have to go out and...
When you log in, you actually see all these views, and where everyone's logged in, a pin pops up, so you know a person is there. You don't know who it is until they actually have a chat, and then you can engage them either one-on-one or sort of through the whole crowd and have an open conversation. But that's sort of just one half of what we do. That's sort of what we call the toy aspects of the fun compulsion loop aspect of what we do. We're also a tool in the sense that we provide information regarding the venue, from everything from where the restrooms are, what the best food is, where you could get merchandise. And eventually we hope to, you know, be able to partner up with several of these teams and be able to offer fans something valuable, like discounts to, you know, Derek Jeter hits a home run, you get your Derek Jeter jersey for 10% off, you know, just because the team thinks it's
a market. How do the clubs feel about this in the early stages? Are they even aware this technology exists? Are you getting any kind of receptivity, or are you getting sort of the, what do you think you're doing in my stadium?
No. Actually, clubs really enjoy this. They all know that mobile right now is sort of like the wild, wild west, and a lot of these teams, sort of similar to what you inferred in a previous question, realize that it's the next big thing. They just don't know fully how to grasp it. And they really see us and a few of our competitors as sort of technological solutions to things that they want to enhance their game day experiences. So, you know, right now we're positioning ourselves and so are several others as sort of their solutions, their technological solutions.
And again, you're solving a problem that the clubs basically had kind of hit a brick wall in because of the fact, like the moat at Yankee Stadium, for example,
exactly,
where everyone can afford to spend $1,500 to sit back there or whatever, $2,500, whatever it is, and you could literally, with venuing, you can virtually, you know, not that you can actually sit in that seat, but you can have that point of view of what that person, and then you could be chatting with someone that's sitting down there. That's basically, you know, it's almost like, in a way, it's kind of cross-marketing the entire stadium so that someone could be in the restaurant having a good time. Someone could be walking around at the concession stands over in the stores. Someone could be down the right field line. Someone could have caught a foul ball. And you're meeting all these different people in this virtual chat room. And so what it does is kind of creates a community sense, even though you might be separated by economic and you know, several tiers, that you can communicate. Now, what's been the feedback from people using it even in the trial version? Have you gotten sort of more ideas from it, or you still kind of sailing along with this original concept?
It's amazing how much you learn just by using whatever monster you create. And we've learned a lot of best practices in how to use the application. And going forward, you know, there have been sort of simple changes that we've made just to the functionality of the application thanks to user feedback. And that's sort of how I think anyone running a tech company should always look at their product. You need to have thick skin and realize, look, if you're doing something wrong and you're getting this feedback, you have to be willing to make that change, because if you don't, someone else is going to come around, and it's so easy to make these changes. They're going to make it a hell of a lot quicker than you can and just provide a better product.
And again, what do you perceive to be your biggest competition to this and your biggest ally right now?
Sure. Well, there are very few apps doing what we're doing. There's sort of one other application that is very much like a Twitter based around a sporting event. It's called CrowdZone, I believe. And it's sort of that same vertical feed in the style of Twitter, but basically for each event, it's for every single sporting event going on. It's sort of just an open dialogue for anyone watching the game from anywhere. There's really no other company creating the social network for those people attending a particular live event like what we're doing. And sort of the beauty of all this new technologies and all these new applications is many of them are perfect complements for one another. So we've mentioned Foursquare a bunch of times. We don't see them as a competitor. We see them as a perfect complement. You look at Facebook Places now. See, same thing. You know, you could go to a game, check in, announce to the world that you're at that game via their applications,
mm-hmm.
and then chat with everyone who's at the game with you within hours. So it's really cool, and it's really fun the sector to be in, because it really everyone in it really does promote investments. A lot of companies will open up their API, so bits of their proprietary data for other companies to come in and take and build off of. So it really is a fun sector to be in.
Well, it just sounds like something that you're in the foothills in. I guess my extension of that, in talking to Mike about it, is that when will there be, because of the nature of these phones as being cameras and video cameras, when will the technology advance to the point where you're not just chatting, where you actually can generate, you know, a perspective sitting in someone's chair through their phone, so they could just use their phone basically as a camera and say, here I am sitting in the Pepsi porch at, say, at Citi Field. Here's my perspective, and I'm giving you a live feed of me sitting in my chair at Citi Field to someone that maybe is sitting behind the dugout somewhere.
The most scary thing is that technology sort of already exists. The new iPhone and several of the new Android phones sort of have front-facing cameras now. So remember when one camera on a phone was cool? Now they're two. The reason why they have that is so you could have these face-to-face chats, similar to Skyping with other people.
Right.
Well, the problem right now is, you know, the bandwidth issue, as you alluded to before, is difficult, and that's the biggest thing facing mobile companies right now is how do we transfer all this data? Because I could write the code to do all these cool things, however, I can't transfer the necessary data to really execute it. And that's why with, you know, you hear all this, you know, we have your 3G network. Well, 4G, the next generation, which Sprint already has out, but AT&T and Verizon are coming out with in the near future, well, that's supposed to be able to transmit all the data you're ever going to need. It's supposed to be stronger than Wi-Fi and go through concrete walls. And when that comes out, well, you know, watch out. There's going to be a lot of cool new products and a lot of cool new technology coming out.
No. For the hearing delayed, because the technology you just, the terms you just went by just totally locked up my frontal lobe, what are we watching out for and when is it coming out? I want to get those two pieces, because I just, it was like a cross town bus, we could just said. Because I just go, oh, what? It's happening? When? Okay, so what are we looking for and when is it coming out?
Sure, we're looking for the fourth generation of wireless networks.
Okay.
And the first version of that is already out. Sprint already has sort of a baby version of that out, if you want, sort of a bite-sized version. They sort of, to be able to be the first one to market, rushed a version out, which is still much better than 3G, however, it's only available in places like Plano, Texas, and Wichita Falls.
Okay.
When Verizon and AT&T come out with their versions, which is supposedly happening later this year to early 2011, well, then now it's gone mainstream, and it'll be in every major city. And that is supposed to transfer data, as I said, faster than Wi-Fi, faster than your wireless network within your home. It's going to be pretty much full internet to your phone. And when that happens, it's going to be able to shoot the data that a lot of these cool new applications really need. It's going to be able to, you know, do it fast enough to execute a lot of these cool applications and technologies.
So it only gets better for you, because once people can do this, then everybody basically becomes a Cub reporter at these games. So basically, you look at the next baseball season, all this stuff's going to be on board.
Yeah, hopefully. Something about what people sort of misunderstand about the younger generation, they think that we're all narcissistic because we have our Facebook profiles. I'll tell you that I think it's human nature for anybody to sort of want the ability to just self-broadcast. What's just now available is the medium to do so. Anyone can now go on Ustream, whether you be Floyd Mayweather doing your racist chants or Stephon Marbury, you know, sort of crying in front of the camera, or, you know, your regular Joe Schmo just talking to the world or playing his music. Anyone can self-broadcast now.
Yeah, come on. 50 years ago, people had a ham radio for the same reason, and they got CBs and the truckers. I mean, this is just, all we've done is just made improve the technology so that you can get your voice and your image and your ideas and, you know, your passion and your musician, whatever, out there so someone else can hear you. Because going through the traditional filters, there's too many ways of getting sucked up and blocked off. That's why there's, you know, more waitresses than actresses, you know. That's sort of the way of the world. So I guess kind of circling around to where I started with you here, if we accept that this is from here forward, at certain point, new media is just going to be called media, right? It's going to be mainstream, and it looks like it's moving there rapidly. What happens to what preceded it? Does it go the way of the dinosaur? Do we never see a newspaper? Everyone's walking around on an iPad. Do you just see it being a kind of an analog thing where those things just like maybe they just go to Sunday? Or how do we cope with the fact that the country's getting older, but the technology's getting younger?
I think it's sort of interesting. You've already begun to see the transition. I mean, Oxford Dictionary is discussing whether or not to end their print version anymore just because no one reads it. No one buys the paperback version. They all look at it on the computer now.
Yeah, so we've made a more convenient way to get things done.
So I'd almost argue that, you know, what you've mentioned, this sort of evolution, has already begun. It's not, it's healthily along into the process. Maybe it's, again, I get sort of a jaded view of it just because I'm so far into the swamp here. Exactly. But, you know, even I read the New York Times, you know, I take the train every morning. I see people reading the New York Times, holding the newspaper, folding it out, getting everyone's way. I'm reading it on my cell phone every morning using the New York Times application. So it's really, just a matter it's just a matter of time before everyone who at least knows how to operate one of these machines, even half the amount that is necessary, is going to be able to do, really just consume all of their media via their phone or tablet or whatever it may be.
You're seemingly on way ahead of the mainstream guy listening to the show, or girl listening to the show, as far as what's coming next, because we're just coping with what's here right now. I mean, if I walk into an Apple store, I'm hoping it's a fruit stand, because I walk in there and they come at me and they're talking. I can't even get a decent conversation in Radio Shack anymore, because I have no idea. When they start talking the basics, it's almost like you have to be part techie to know what the heck people are saying, because it's almost like going to the mechanic with your car, and it's like, you know, it's going to be this, and this, and this. And I guess because the technology comes out so quickly, and was out in January, it's out by September, and maybe the cycle's even getting to 6 months at this point, at what point, like a Kindle, I mean, I got someone coming in next week that works for Random House, And she's always pushing this Kindle on me. It's down about $200. And I look at it. It's gray. It doesn't seem good. And then it's like, do you buy one of these things and you have, like, immediately have buyer's remorse because the next thing, the next toy is better? At what point do you get something you can cope with? It's just like we came out with the microwave. It was a microwave. It got a little fancier. The box got changed. But it was basically cooking stuff. With this stuff, like you're saying, if now we have two-way cameras, if we're going to have apps that are going to be going light speed in 6 months, why would someone buy something now that might be basically obsolete in by March? Or do we just keep upgrading like we did with software?
You know, personally, with my technology, I've always succumbed to the rule of what I call the Madden rule, which as a kid is how I purchased Madden video games. I'd buy it every other year because if I bought it the next year, you just have to wait. Just because you need to allow the technology, A, the time to develop enough changes, and B, make it worthwhile on your original purchase. But, yeah, it is definitely scary. If you have a keeping up with the Joneses mentality, you're going to end up with an empty wallet if you're trying to buy the newest phone every single time.
People are chasing the wind with this because the technology is so intoxicating, they always have to have the next best thing.
Yeah, the beautiful thing, though, is where I think that these, you know, quote-unquote techies have made great strides is, yes, they have their lingo, and yes, you know, they could probably go into more detail than you'd ever need. But when creating hardware and software now, you don't fully need to be the techie to enjoy it. So to have your 50-something-inch plasma television and your Netflix, you don't have to be the most tech-savvy person out there. And that's really where they've made huge strides, is making something like Google so easy that, you know, my 80-something-year-old grandmother can use it now and use it to look up recipes. So
Facebook's a perfect example because MySpace, I could never understand why anyone that was above the age of maybe 15, their eyeballs would I could not read a damn thing on a MySpace page. Everyone was on MySpace. I couldn't read anything. It looked like a teenager's bedroom wall. It was crap everywhere. And when Facebook came out, it was, clean. Everybody was kind of like, okay, here it is. And it just seemed like they made a social platform that included, you know, 80% of society rather than 20%. And that's why you can have people on Facebook that have very few computer skills. But it's idiot-proof. It's sort of like the way Twitter went. Twitter was the same. Twitter was even simpler. It took off. At what point do we see less platforms being developed and more applications on those platforms taking place, and we go more vertical in the app world rather than horizontal in the platform sense?
I think, again, you're already seeing it. The beauty of what Facebook's doing is they've opened up so much of their API and allowed people to develop applications for Facebook that you have full businesses running on Facebook. I know a company that we've worked with in the past called Cameo Stars. Their main product is sort of these greeting cards and happy birthday wishes that you could send just through Facebook. And what's cool about those is, you know, they record these videos with these celebrities. And, you know, you have Kim Kardashian wishing you a happy birthday for you and all your friends to see. So Facebook, which has already created its own currency, is sort of realizing the power of creating a vertical within its platform.
Yeah, well, we've had, Eric Qualman on here a couple times, social intelligence dude, Socionomics, I guess is his moniker, talking about, you know, Facebook being the third most populated country in the world, if it was a country, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm very, you know, and that social network movie comes out October 1st, I'm there, I'm going to see it. I'm totally hooked on the fact that this stuff never fails. It is full of warts. There's not a computer alive that isn't screwed up in some way, you know, with some spyware, some malware, some something. And I don't know what we would do without it at this point. There's no way to go backwards. My kind of final kind of twist on this is to get out of sports for a minute and out of entertainment for a minute and just look at this thing from a security and from a healthcare standpoint. As we go forward, and this is something that we talked about at the top of the show, insurance companies are going to start kicking everybody now because basically, I think it was 30-something million more people are going to be getting access to health care in about 3 weeks. And the insurance companies are going to be raising the premiums to cover the fact that there's more benefits now because, you know, they're letting pre-existing conditions come in and all the other stuff they name. As that happens, to me, the direct result of that, because there's not enough providers to take care of all these people, is people aren't going to be really inclined to go to the doctor because they're going to spend half a day in a waiting room. So these apps and this ability to get information from A to B when someone has a checklist of symptoms or someone has, you know, an exercise protocol, someone has a dietary plan, isn't that going to be an extension of what you're talking about here in terms of sending information from A to B? And so someone doesn't have to spend 3 hours at the doctor. They could just sit there on the train and get their information and they're done, or get their blood work analysis and they're done. I know that's happening on a smaller scale now, but as you get more people involved, wouldn't that be the next logical step? And what are the security risks, and how does that get insulated so people feel safe about doing that? Because we're 10 years removed from Y2K, and we're still dealing with, you know, that sort of cyber terror that goes on with information when it pertains to an individual and their identity.
Yeah, I think that's sort of just the next evolution for health. I'm sure that there's going to be a ton of diagnostic things that could be done via these mobile devices. Do I ever think it'll replace going to a doctor and seeing them face-to-face? Probably not, but, you know, they probably said the same thing about talking to people, and a lot of people prefer email now. And when you get to the security aspect of it, it's amazing how much more, how security-heavy these large social networks are getting. The sort of cloud computing, the ability, which is really having these massive servers that you could sort of just rent space on, is incredibly secure. You know, NASA are the people sending people, astronauts to the moon. They don't even have their own servers anymore. They outsource it to Amazon, and they pay like $600 a month or something because it's so cheap and so secure. So I don't think as a consumer I worry too much about hackers getting in, especially because these companies are now hiring hackers to help create their security measures. I worry more about the information I myself make public via, you know, my Facebook profile or any of these other platforms that I choose, you know, I personally choose to give off to the world.
Right, right. And again, the savvy user is very selective about what they do, and the kind of gullible one isn't. And you sort of, I mean, it's sort of become, it's like, you know, they have the commercial with the two networks, and it's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to go and bash myself on Facebook. Between drunk dialing and all the other kind of lingo that's emerged, are we collectively on this learning curve that people are starting to realize that they can't put their pictures of themselves, you know, painting their roommate's ass orange and then have their resume on the same, you know, on the same Facebook page, you know?
It was funny. When I was leaving college about a year and a half ago.
How old are you, by the way? I want to get we can share that with the audience.
Yeah, sure. I'm 22 right now. So
you're 22 years old?
Yeah, I graduated, 2009?
Oh, my God. I got so
scary world, right?
22.
Yeah, well.
All right, so when you graduated college. Yeah.
So when I graduated college.
I was 57, by the way.
Well, that was the year I was born to make you feel happy.
Oh, my God.
Anywho. Well, the story is, it's amazing how many kids I saw go through the interview process who I lost as friends temporarily on Facebook because they didn't want these prospective employers seeing their pictures. So, yeah, I think people have gotten a lot.
Move. People only learn that because someone else didn't do that, and they go, hey, dummy, have another account, put all your fun stuff over here, and put your serious stuff over there.
It's kind of funny. I mean, if the world gets too savvy, which I'm sure it never will, then websites like Text From Last Night will never exist. So,
yeah, exactly.
For my personal entertainment, I hope we stay kind of ignorant and dumb.
there's that, because again, the country's getting older. So they're not going to learn. They're going to make the same mistake. You guys are going to be sitting there getting, you don't have to go out of your house to be entertained. You can just go on all these sites and just enjoy the people like me that are flopping around up there, screwing up. Because
which is
there's
funny.
So much. Yeah, well, I'm glad we amuse you. But
well, Well, you bring up a great point, and that's sort of the reason why venueing came to be, is because, yeah, people don't want to leave their couch. Why go to the stadium when I could go, you know, for $5,000 I'll get a great club seat to one game, and obviously that's a great seat. But even for a few hundred dollars, $200 to go to a Yankee game for a family of four, why not just get the DirecTV package and get every single baseball game from the whole year for that price? So as a consumer, as a sort of a rational person, because of this technology, the at-home experience is, you know, A, better for some sports because I get my 16 views, I get to keep up with my fantasy team,
right,
et cetera, or I go sit in my seat. So we sort of say, you know, hey, you know, the Jumbotron is nice. That 60-yard television that's in Dallas is really cool. But people want these personalized experiences, and, you know, that's where venueing comes in, and we really hope to provide that via this social network that we hope to create.
Well, I'll give you a little insight here that I shared with Mike and also with Chris over. Is when I was back at the draft, and the Jets and Giants, you know, sharing the stadium, kind of, because they hate each other, like they just can't decide of each other. The night of the draft, I went in with the Jets family. We kind of stuck over to the Giants side of the party. I was talking to one of the guys downstairs about the naming of the stadium. Hey, you got $600 million, you can name the stadium, right? And I said, you know, what are you guys going to do to sell these PSLs up here in these club seats once you guys start the season? Because, you know, it's kind of a fixed crowd at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I don't know. And so I asked him, I go, what's the next big, technology to come into the stadium? And he says, virtual attendance. I said, what's that? And he goes, that's when you get people like you on with these apps having these phones that could give a tour. Of here I am on this level, and I'm at the game, and here I am, you know, getting wasted in the parking lot. And basically, you're sitting home on your couch, and your friend is sitting there on the phone with you, and he's giving you the virtual experience of being at the game, selling the game experience by using this technology. And he goes, whoever puts that together, he goes, that's a seven-figure industry. Because between the PSLs here, he goes, and definitely, you know, in venues like Citi Field, the new stadium that the Nets are going to have, whatever their name's going to be in Brooklyn. And even stadiums that are sold out all the time, like the Garden and Yankee Stadium, is that you're getting an exclusive sort of, customized thing that becomes another sort of amenity for the guys that run these stadiums to use as a way to market themselves without having to spend a lot of advertising money. They let the fans do it. And you guys sitting there with your ones and zeros go collect, piles of money. 22 years old, I could strangle you. So my final question to give. And we were talking along with. Let's see if I can get this right. I'll go back over here. My God, this is me being technical right now. With Jared Murray from venueing.com, as I'm getting tweeted, I'm getting assaulted here from 9 different angles. Is that if you had to stop the world right now from spinning and say, in 5 years, you know, would you say venueing is something everybody does or something 50% of the crowd does or something a third of the crowd does? What do you think the ceiling is on this concept?
I really hope that it's everybody. Of course, it never will be. I really think it's going to be, you know, I think it's hard to say it's going to be X percent of the crowd. There's sort of a rule in social media that 10% of the population makes 90% of the content, and I'm sure that we'll sort of follow somewhat along the lines of that. But what I really hope and sort of what we've done for the application is for that remaining 90% of the world, well, we have something for you too. So maybe 10% of the crowd is using our application to actually chat with one another, but perhaps another 40% of the crowd actually go in there to get some useful information, know how long the line is at a concession or whatever it may be. So I really think that the potential is limitless, especially as it gets easier to do things like we're doing with the advancements in the hardware, in these phones' abilities, and again, in what these cellular networks allow you, what type of data they allow you to transmit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really scalable. You see how quickly something like Facebook caught on. You know, we're sort of trying to attack sort of a niche market, which are these live events. And hey, if 1 in 16 people in the world are using Facebook, why can't, you know, 1 in 8 people in that venue be using Venuing? So.
Yeah, I mean, between that, I mean, you'll be sitting in the stands. You're going to be tweeting. You're going to be texting. You're going to be Venuing.
The funny thing is, fans are already. You go to a baseball game. Half the fans are already on their BlackBerry, and you know, a lot of old time fans. It pisses them off. They're like, why is that guy in front of me not paying attention to the game? He spent $400 for his ticket.
Right.
He's on his BlackBerry the whole damn game.
Yeah.
You know,
he was going off today because somebody was keeping score on their iPad instead of, with a pencil.
There's probably an app, or someone hasn't created, here's a $1 million idea, an application that you don't even need to do the keep the score card, which is half the fun. It'll automatically update so you can just look at it, you know, so...
Yeah, it automatically does it.
So, you have kids who can't tell time because of digital watches. You'll have kids who can't score baseball games because people are doing it for them already. So,
it's crazy to me. To me, it's like you're going to be sitting in a game and you're going to be basically just a technical cod, you know, just sitting there. You can't experience the game because you're busy, like almost like you're in a multimedia universe there. And I don't know. I mean, when Take Me Out to the Ball Game comes on, do you even know what the hell's going on? Are you connected? And do you see it? I mean, to me, it's like, you know, I grew up in the era where there was bootlegs. You know, you go to a concert and you bootleg it. And is it going to become a point where that's the next sort of pirate media that comes out of this? Is people going to use your apps and things like that to basically take a little bit back because it costs so much to go to the game? I'll just record stuff and I'll put, you know, and it's like, all these highlight reels and everything else, it seems like there's an independent media that's emerging that isn't beholden to the corporations or the teams or the mainstream media at all that could really, you know, sort of take over because there's more of them than there is the people that they're being, you know, kind of competing with here. I just, you guys know more than me. I'm just saying, I just see it as something that can go either way in terms of you're creating a lot of access, and like you said, there's a lot of ignorance. And there's a lot of greed. So you put those three in a stew, usually you come up with a couple people walk over to jail, a couple people walk away with a whole bunch of money, and everybody else just sort of kind of uses it and gets used to it, and the thing just sort of perfects itself like a big rolling meatball. But
I think the key factor, especially where we're dealing with these live events, into whether it's going to be a black and white market or a gray market is how quickly these large corporations, i.e. venue owners and teams, are to accept these new technologies. And what we've seen personally through our, you know, our meetings and, you know, whatever you read in the daily newspaper is teams are very open to this new technology because they do see it is a great opportunity for them. You mentioned the Giant Stadium before. Well, they built that with all this technology in mind. They put a large number of antenna around the stadium. You look at all these new teams building stadiums, they all hook them up with Wi-Fi. The new Madison Square Garden, when they're done renovating it, is going to have open Wi-Fi for everybody. So
Goodell was saying that they're going to put the red zone from the NFL Network in all these new stadiums so that you'd be sitting. This is mind-blowing. You already spent a fortune to sit in these seats. I mean, my Jeff Rand client, $50,000 for his PSL to sit in the coach's box there, you know, right behind at the bench. And he's going to spend the entire night watching the red zone, you know, or the entire game, watching the red zone on NFL Network on the corners of the on the Jumbotrons so that he can watch the games he's been
to. And it's not even only on the Jumbotrons. As I said, people like to play, not even on the phone. I mean, the teams are handing out, Stephen Ross, who's the owner of the Miami Dolphins, just bought a company called Kangaroo, and they've created this product called FanVision, where I have a little handheld, and it's going to stream to me the game I'm watching. After every single play, I'm going to be able to watch a replay of it, and I get to choose from three different angles. There'll be a video just on the cheerleaders if I want to watch them the whole game. Oh, and, you know, it'll also have Sunday NFL tickets, so I could watch any other game going on at the same time. And it'll also have the Red Zone channel, which is, you know, crack for an NFL fan. So
Exactly. And the gamblers and the fantasy geeks. So literally, you're sitting at the game. It's just like basically sitting at your house up. It's about 50 degrees colder. And you're paying three or four figures to sit in the chair, and you're being just intoxicated with information. I don't know how you, if you're Joe Beningo, You know, you're watching. You're watching.
Yo, bro. Yo, bro. What do you mean, bro?
No, I'm trying. It's like, or if you're that dinosaur there, that stupid the fireman Ed, you know, doing his chant. I mean, you're basically almost watching it in a different like era. You're like a complete dinosaur.
And I don't even know if it's. I wouldn't say they're complete dinosaurs. I think that there's gonna be ways for them to do a lot of their old habits and gigs and what people find so appealing using these new digital mediums. So, you know, Fireman Ed, for example, was using my application, and everyone knew his handle, the name he sort of goes by. He could alert people to, I mean, he's already wildly successful by just getting on the other guy's shoulders, but the JTS, just chant was going to
like
come.
Like I said, he's a caveman, yeah. Yeah, if he had someone like you, someone that's in their 20s sitting near him, that could say, hey, you know, at the end of the third quarter, I'm going to lead a chant, you know, yeah, okay. It's just, to me, it's funny because it's like you guys, and I've sat next to people in your age range. I got a daughter that's 14. You know, it's like I'm really starting to feel really old right now. And your attention is never completely on the action because there's so much going on that's subtext to the action that's either as interesting or more interesting than what's going on in front of you. So say there's a foul ball, you might watch where it goes in the stands, you know, if you're me.
Yeah.
And you're right back looking at the game or looking at the scoreboard where someone from your generation, as I say in generality here, is already on five or six different, you know, tasks that are basically tangential to that. They're checking their fantasy stats. Between pitches, this is going on. So to me, that's a whole different nervous system. That's a nervous system that cannot tolerate silence, that cannot tolerate just a pause. And so there's no peace in that regurgitating kind of thing. There's just a constant traffic. And I guess, again, you're used to it. The generation that preceded you is sort of kind of getting used to it or trying to get used to it because it's overwhelming for us. And the ones behind, like my daughter, it's that's all they know. So eventually, like you said, the Beningos and people like me and the Fireman Ed, we'll be sitting home on our couch and saying the hell with all these. I'll sit here and be overstimmed in my Barker lounger, and you guys can go tweak yourselves into submission and then do your flow TV and whatever else, your sling boxes and everything else. It's all bouncing all over the place. It's exhausting. I remember.
We could probably argue, you know, all day whether or not that's a good or bad thing for society. But
well,
you know, an interesting statistic for me is kids under the age of 18 right now send a text message every 10 minutes, and that's including when they're sleeping, I believe. So
yeah.
it's really, you know.
Well,
the lines of communication.
I'm like, I saw the movie Machete last weekend, and Machete, no text. I'm like Machete, you know, Filippi, no text. First of all, I can't get over the size of these keyboards. I don't know how anybody can type anything with that. My thumb hits like three keys every time I touch it, so I'm completely, you know, it's like, it's just, to me, it's foreign to me. Does anyone want to type on a tiny typewriter that fast something vitally important? I'd just rather call you if I got to do that. So that's me. I'm just, like I said, I'm summer boy. I'm stuck here. I'm happy. I'm happy with this. It's fine. I can get by with little technology I can tolerate. Even being on Blog Talk Radio is, you know, it's just basically just a phone. It's enough technology for me. But anyone want to get a hold of you? Let's give the particulars here so we can wrap you up here for the night. And you would kind of stay over and answer my questions and. So I want to make sure we give you guys a good plug. So if they want to get a hold of you, what's the site? What's the way to get in? What's the app? How much it costs? All that.
Sure. The beta version of the application is out on the iTunes Store. We're running sort of a constant 24/7 demo. So if you want to go in, play along, feel free. We'd love to hear your feedback. You could email me personally at jared@venuing.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/venuing. And again, on Facebook at facebook.com/venuing. So really, we sort of reach the world using all the tools that are out there, and feel free to hit us up on any one of them.
All right. Well, like I said, you're a shining example of your generation, which I'll leave the generations that follow to figure out if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But you're definitely, you are living the dream, my friend. I got to believe it only gets better for you because you sound like you're really enjoying the hell out of it, which is half the battle. Most people coming through with this much happening. I saw the 90s what it did to all those guys on Wall Street when they were your age or a little bit older, and they were looked like they were 50. I mean, they were stressed out. There was the boiler room. You guys just love it. You know how to play. You love how to play, and you know how to play well. So, enjoy the hell out of the ride, and thanks for joining me tonight on Summertime. And I will definitely be in contact with you because I might actually need you at this conference I'm doing in October to explain some things to people that are as old or older than me, so that this healthcare 2.0 doesn't completely go off the cliff, because I think you might have a different and better perspective than most of us in the room. So I might be in touch with you for that. But thanks for joining me tonight, and we'll definitely get. And then you guys are going to be out at Citi Field next week doing some tests, and in Yankee Stadium as well. And you guys can check out the event calendar over at the site, because these guys are going to be really trying to get you guys used to it, get your feet wet before the playoffs, and start your venueing. Your venueing world, as soon as possible. So, thanks for joining me tonight, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you so much for having us, and looking forward to speak to you in the near future.
All right, man. Take care. Get older.
All right, we'll try. Day
Goodbye.
By day. Goodbye.
All right, there goes that's Jared. I have no idea what I just did. Let's just see if I can. Sum up my thoughts here.
Have you ever transcended space and time?
Time, not space. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right. Yeah, and I could get Elvis out for that. Let's see. Elvis is around. Oh, look at this keyboard exploding in my hand. He's 22 years old.
What the fuck was he talking about?
There you go. So that sums up my interview with Jared from venueing.com. That's Jared. I can't stop saying that. Jared Murmy from venueing.com. 22-year-old entrepreneur. He's probably going to be Mark Cuban in 5 years. He's my new best friend. Wow. All right, so picking up where I kind of left off before. Let's see if there's anything going on in Brooklyn. I need to report because it's still 8-8. They tied it in the bottom of the ninth. Leadoff double, winning run on second. Oh, my God. He's got to call me. Let's see, I gotta get a hold of Mike here. How am I gonna get a hold of Mike? I want a live feed. See if we can do it. Oh. Give him the number. This is pathetic. This is a man using technology as it's not meant to be used. Let's see if this happens. The magic of television here. Magic. Well, that's going on. What else did I have to do? Oh, the Coco update. If you haven't registered for the Coherence Conference, which I'm definitely going to drag this Jared kid up here by his Buster Browns up to Bridgeport to talk to the Health 2.0 bloggers. I want him on that panel on Sunday. Screw all you rat bastards that haven't been registering and getting involved, you know? I got a bunch of fraidy cats. I'm surrounded by pussies! Pussies that won't act! Hello? Get on your horse already! Get to Bridgeport! The COCO conference is coming October 2nd and 3rd. Coherence for all! And roll for one, something. Let's see if Mike's here. Mikey! Yep. Nothing yet. But they got a lead off. Let's not do this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
So anyway, just to give you guys a little hint, I'm going to be doing a football physiology fantasy Friday. Philippi picks. That you'll be seeing coming out this week. I will not pick the game tomorrow. Well, actually, I'll pick it here on the air. Okay. We got Drew Brees and Anto going against Brett Favre, a big Philo. And since today is the new moon, tomorrow starts the Philo lunar cycle, which means the coherence comes from other people. So, advantage 5 for tomorrow night's game. And just to give you the beat on the locals, on Sunday we have Eli the XO against Matt Moore the Onto for the Carolina Panthers. And so we got an XO and Onto during a Philo Moon. Very difficult to call, but a slight edge to the Onto because they're just really glorified Philos anyway. But we'll see, because there's a lot of Philos on the Giants team that basically could support Eli. It's a home game, so slight edge to Matt Moore in terms of the quarterback's performance if you're in your fantasy mode. And the game Monday night with the Jets, we have Sanchez against Mr. Flacco. Again, a Philo Sanchez against an XO Flacco. Big advantage for Sanchez on Monday night. So there you go. So that'll be the Fantasy Physiology Football. We'll be premiering this Friday on thesummerspace.org. And live, coming to you live from Brooklyn, do we have a score?
Yes. Cyclones win. They stay alive. 9-8. The Wild pitch scores the winning run. And
wow! Mike Zimmer reporting live at the end of summertime. Oh, my God, for the 12th inning?
I barely made it. I didn't think I was going to make it. Now I just got to find my car in the parking lot. That's going to be the captain tonight.
Is it like with Chris Carlin? Is it pandemonium for Scataway?
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you what. It was a quaint crowd. I would say about 2,000 people because today's a Jewish holiday, Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
But it was a passionate crowd. I mean, look, you've been to Brooklyn. You know, these guys, they take this seriously. They were living and dying with this game. The Cyclones had taken, they were down 1-0, they tied it up, and then they were down 2-1, and they took a 5-2 lead, and took a 6-3 lead, and then, within seconds, they were down 7-6 again, and then they tied it up, and it was back and forth, and they had a tie.
Well, what
in the
happened in the ninth if they went off on Wally? He didn't change the bullpen or something.
Yeah, they were a little upset because he didn't bring in the closer. He brought in the setup man. There was an Armando Benitez clone that gave up the lead. And, he gave up the lead. And then it was interesting. This is the best part about Wally Ball, if that's what you want to call it. And I'm going to have to put you on speakerphone because I'm about to drive. And
okay.
We don't want Silva to get a ticket. We'll have to talk to a police officer while you're on the air. So I'm going to put you on speakerphone. But
what happened?
Hold on one sec. No, sorry about that. Very unprofessional on the air, but sorry about that.
This is Silva time. We don't care.
But, but here's two perfect examples of why Wally is the perfect manager, what the Mets need. Bottom of the eighth, two outs. Siciliani walks. I believe it was Siciliani. Steals second, and then there's a little flare ground ball between third and short. Third baseman basically knocks off his glove, kicks to the shortstop, which is normally an infield hit. Not in Wally Ball. Wally sends the guy from second home, forces the shortstop to make a perfect throw. Of course, he doesn't, and they tie the game. So they tie the game on an infield hit. Runner scores from second. Now, they get down in the top of the ninth, 8-7, and as soon as that team, because it was, very quick, they had tied the game on that great play. Jamestown comes back, very quickly in the top of the ninth. They get out of the inning. The Cyclones are down, by a run. Wally, immediately in the dugout, is firing that club up. He's getting them ready, getting them pumped, reminding them that, they're still in the game. Let's get going. You don't see that with the current Mets club. You won't see Jerry do that. And the Cyclones tie the game. The first batter gets out. They get a hit. They wound up tying the game on a sacrifice fly. I mean, just aggressive base running, aggressive baseball, stealing bases, bunting. I mean, it's anyone who criticizes this brand of baseball has obviously not come out to this ballpark. And you and I have been out here. I've been out here about 3 or 4 times this year. I have been thoroughly impressed. And no, I mean, look, I'll that's a whole other story about the age of the league and whether or not, the Cyclones are men among boys. That's something that's been discussed a long time, in Brooklyn. But, this team isn't the most talented team, but they play well, they play hard, and they're they have a couple of stars, and they're just aggressive. They're a relentless. The word I use is the Cyclones are a relentless team, and I think that's exactly what you know, what's necessary in Flushing. So it was a great night, and tomorrow's the decisive game three.
Well, I will definitely be there, and I'm going to give you a call in a minute when I get off the air, but thanks for checking in and coming out. I was praying we get a run here before the end of the game to get you on the air. I kind of went overtime with Jared watching the update there. You were tweeting every couple of minutes. I was hanging on every pitch, and that stupid the minor league site doesn't update things. It's like the scoreboard at Wrigley Field forever. It's like getting behind. It's making me nuts.
That's why you have me.
That's right. We have Mike Sue. We don't need them. All right, I'll call you back in a minute. Thanks for checking in, and you know, we got the W tonight, so we're one step away from going to the finals here.
All right, take care.
All right, man, thanks. All right, so thanks to our sudden guest there, Mike Silva, and of course the big Jared. Can't even say his last name. Jared Murphy from Venuing.com, and we'll be back next week with a mimetic type of guest that I will have to explain. It's got a complicated name, complicated life. But so do we all. And that is all this week's Soul Time. I will leave you with a little Hank Williams. As we go from baseball to football to healthcare to vaccines to venuing to the crazy kook priest. It's all out there, baby. And it's all here live every week at 9 o'clock on Zuma Time. This is Dr. Mark saying travel light to the darkness, be yourself, and be well. So, Jared! Think of the Cyclone.
Night football coming on tonight. Are you ready?
Yes!
Are you ready?
Alone, Sabians.